Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you tried. No hell below us, above us, only sky. Imagine all the imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for, and no religion to living life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world as one. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. Brotherhood, sisterhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all this world. Ooh. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will be as one. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. no need for greed or hunger. Brotherhood, sisterhood of man and woman, imagine all the people sharing.
Thank you so much, Brannis McKenzie, our Minister of Music Emerita, and Thomas Hughes. Thank you for that extraordinary rendition of Imagine by the late, great John Lennon. I love that song. Imagination is the portal through which our best ideas, our highest ideas for heightened living come through. It is the place where we're suddenly aware of other possibilities. They seem to arrive through this portal of imagination like magic. Where did I get that idea? J.K. Rowling, who you may know is the author of the Harry Potter series, said that, "I don't know where the idea for a kid that goes to wizarding school came from. The characters just seem to write themselves." Imagination carries forth great things, and I'm sure this has something to do with my talk that's coming. And while I am being grateful for Brannis and Thomas, I also want to lift up my colleague and dear friend and sister, Reverend Sonia. You may not be aware, but Reverend Sonia has been doing all the things from at least 7 o'clock this morning that I'm aware of. And I'm so grateful for you. James Brown may have been the hardest working man in show business. I am certain that Reverend Sonia Russell is the hardest working woman in ministry. Yes, indeed. And I tell you, ministry is not necessarily an easy profession. Or maybe I should say ministry is a different kind of profession. Every profession or endeavor that I can think of, and I'm trying to make sure that when I say profession, I'm not just trying to limit us to some white-collar idea of maybe just we're talking about doctors, because doctors affect a mode of healing. That's what they're concerned about. And every single profession, every human endeavor, has at its core an idea for some kind of healing to be an outcome. I mean, it could be anything. A blue-collar profession, let's say a chef. A chef has an intended outcome of healing that looks like either nutrition or at least satiety for the people who are, you know, partaking of whatever the chef has prepared. A carpenter has an ideal of organization in terms of platforms or furniture to support things or you or the house in terms of framing. That's a kind of healing, the healing of organization. A plumber brings about healing in your home when the water is either not going out the right way or it's not coming in well enough. I can go down the list of professions, and everyone I can think of except one, they all have something in common. And that is, they're centered, or the outcome has an effect on at least one of the five physical senses. Okay, so like with a chef, you get to taste something. With the carpenter, you get to feel something or see something. Every profession has some sort of physical, external kind of outcome that is recognizable as the healing. Not so much with ministry. With ministry, we find ourselves at least once a week needing to describe things that are formless, invisible, and intangible that you can't see, that you can't appropriate with any one of your physical senses, so that after whatever you've been through in the whole week, you come to places like Heart and Soul Center of Light and say, "Minister, enlighten me. This was a heck of a week. Let me leave here with evidence that something has happened." I can't give you anything that involves the five physical senses. However, we do bring something that has to do with beingness. And I'm thinking of our beloved Reverend Dr. Audriette Earle right now. She describes herself, as you know, as a serial preacher. And it occurred to me this past week, you know what? It seems like, how else can you approach this job? When it comes to talking about infinite reality, all the power that there is, how things come about, how do you do that in a finite 30-minute to 45-minute segment once a week and have people get it in such a way like that? Woo, thanks, Rev. I'm good now. I might be back next week. I might not. There is no way to do it, I think, except maybe as Dr. Audriette does it, to serialize the talk, to serialize the concepts, to make them link, because there's so much you can't talk about ultimate reality in 30 minutes. And I want to hearken back. I want to be a serial preacher today, serializing what has gone on here for the past couple of weeks. You'll remember that Reverend Amon was here on Resurrection Sunday. And he brought us a particular kind of message about being. He's talking about being resurrected, celebrating the Christ, the risen Christ in you. You remember that? Now, when we look at resurrection, one of the things that he shared with us is that resurrection is being in, I mean, from a metaphysical standpoint, being in a new consciousness, it's a new attitude, a new level of faith. And he said that when we're resurrected, the stone is rolled away. The stone that is, well, whatever the obstacle is to our highest living, that problem, that prognosis, that summons, that whatever it is that keeps us from living our highest version of ourselves, That is suddenly gone. He didn't say, you roll away the stone. He says the stone is just gone. The stone is gone because it has no authority, it has no power to be there in the first place. Just through our realization, when we're resurrected in consciousness, the stone goes away. Reverend Amon went on to say that when we're resurrected, we get to take off the grave clothes. What are the grave clothes except that costumery that we are wearing to disguise the fact that we are spirit having a human experience? We are more than what appears. And the garments that we cloak ourselves in, to keep ourselves looking small, to keep ourselves looking helpless and hopeless and at odds with life, suddenly don't have any meaning. When you're resurrected, they come off. And then we get to, as Reverend Amon says, step out of the grave. Step out of that dead place that had no service for us at all. That place of living that wasn't working for us. He said that when we're resurrected, we are being. And I'm putting extra emphasis on the word being. You've heard me mention it a few times now. Being in the flow of a divine destiny to realize a purpose. Those were his exact words. Reverend Dr. Andriette last week followed that up with something. Now, what she was talking about was largely about knowing the truth about one's own being. She gave particular tribute to Ricky Byers' amazing song, Trust Love, and the line that says, for love will have the final word. Reverend Dr. Andriette says that you are divine. You are the one that is whole, perfect, and complete. That is the nature of your being. She said, we are here to be the perfect givers of love and receivers of love, said Ricky. And love will have the final word. And Dr. Andriette said, the final word is that God created you as itself. How can you wear grave clothes on top of that? So, what I've come here to share today is that the being part is essential. You can't resurrect yourself out of any situation until you know who you be, who you exist as, who you shine forth as. Knowing who you be is all about awareness. But is that the end of the story? I want to share a story that goes back a lot of years. I have been working either with Reverend Andriette or been a student of Reverend Dr. Andriette or a colleague of Reverend Dr. Andriette, spanning like 25 years for all of that, maybe a little bit more. And I remember when I came out of ministerial school. Heart and Soul Center of Light was my first place of ministry. And I just knew I was ready. I had all the answers because I had graduated, you see. One of the first assignments I got was to teach a class that I'm not even sure if it's still part of the adult education curriculum. It was called Financial Freedom. And it's an amazing class. The tagline for the class was, awareness is curative. And on one particular day, back when we very first started Heart and Soul, and I was teaching this class, we were talking about something, and I said, well, you know, Rev, awareness is curative. And she gave me the look. It's that Well, she politely wanted to disagree. She said, I'm not sure that awareness by itself constitutes any kind of healing. She might not have known who she was talking to. I just graduated. I said, of course it does. Because awareness constitutes a healing of the condition of ignorance. That's the first thing that has to happen. When you don't know, you don't know. But once you know, you can't unknow. And let's say a person is struggling with poverty and believes they're not enough or they don't deserve. Once you help that person understand that there's more than enough and that the very nature of the universe is abundance, you have healed them of the former condition of not knowing their right and perfect inheritance is always available. So I broke all that down for Reverend Ayanna. And she said, and then what? And I was like, and then what? She said, well, in order to change, somebody's got to do something more than just be self-aware. You could be self-aware all day and never have a moment of healing. She says, a person has to do something. It can't just all be about being. There has to be being and doing. Doing something that will bring about newfound awareness that lends one to be in alignment with a demonstration of life that is whatever, prosperity and abundance, perfect health, right relationships, whatever it is. And she said, doing is the only way that such a person can be healed of that condition of seeming lack or limitation. At that point, I was finally silent. I was silent because she was right. I mean, we both were right. Awareness is curative in that it cures ignorance, but you've got to do something once you have awareness. You got to do something to engage a healing activity. Now, my talk today is really about this interplay between being and doing. So being, of course, lends itself into doing. That's what kind of I've been leading up to. But I wanna offer a slide. It's up there already. Boy, they are on it. So the interplay of being and doing, being is having a conscious awareness of the nature of God and your relationship with God. There is one life. That life is God's life. That life is my life now. That is the core of your being that helps place you in a position to have a healing experience. But then there's doing, and the definition that comes up around doing is engaging spiritual practices that pull substance into form. Now, what in the world does that sentence mean? Well, we know what spiritual practices are. Certainly, well, we should. Here at Heart and Soul Center of Light, we talk about spiritual practices kind of at length, all the time, every week. And yet, I think there's more to say about it. What is this idea, or better yet, why do we need to focus on spiritual practices? Sometimes I get the impression that people are like, oh, there he goes again, talking about spiritual practices. Well, spiritual practices are like this picture that you see in front of you. You're an electric car. The charger is spiritual practices. Spiritual practices are like a charging stations that keep you energized enough, powered up enough to bring you into a state of realization where you know you can live at a higher level and have a greater expression of life, a greater expression of life without anxiety, a greater expression of life without fear, a greater expression of life without stress. And spiritual practices are done as a matter of habit with some repetition. That's the part that kind of gets on people's nerves, I think. But it's kind of like my dear sister and colleague, Reverend Sonia, says, when you go to the gym, you don't do just one push-up. Repetition builds mastery. And that's what it takes to pull substance into form. Now, that's the tough part of this sentence, this definition of doing. What does that even mean, pulling universal substance into? First of all, what is substance? Well, let's take a look. I've offered up a definition of substance. If we could pull that up. Substance is something that is real. And I'm going to tell you that I had the great pleasure of being co-facilitator of a book, of a class called Spiritual Economics. This is the book. It was written by Eric Butterworth. It is an extraordinarily powerful book. Whether or not you ever have an opportunity to take the class, you might want to read this book. But substance is described not only in this book, but just about anywhere you look in metaphysics as a formless, invisible, intangible, here we go again, right where ministers live. And it's a ceaseless flow of God's goodness everywhere. There's no spot where God is not. And everything that you desire is already a reality within universal God's substance. Within the mind of God, there is everything that you can imagine, have already imagined, or ever gonna imagine. And God is delighted to give it to you. It is the Father's good pleasure that you should have higher living. Now, the whole of God's substance, and this is like the next slide, Pam. Eric Butterworth, who wrote Spiritual Economics, says the whole of God's substance is present everywhere at the same time, everywhere in space, but not only some of it. All of it is present all the time. It's challenging, perhaps, to get your head around this idea of substance being a thing. It's not just ethereal. There is this current, yeah, I'm a little bit of a science geek. Some of you know this. There's this concept in astrophysics these days where scientists are talking about something called dark matter. Now, they can't see dark matter. They can't detect it as a gravitational wave or any other kind of aspect of physics. But when they look far enough back in time at the span of what they can see, the tiny sliver of the universe that they can see, they see that the way that stars and galaxies are ordered in that sliver of the universe can't be just by like accident or happenstance. There is a particular something that is ordering the cosmos. But they don't know what it is. They can only prove it mathematically. This, by the way, is where science is starting, whether it likes it or not, to converge on some spiritual principle, because that's kind of the same. I'm not saying that, you know, dark matter is substance. I'm saying that substance is kind of like that. You can't detect it, you can't see it, but it is there, and it contains everything that you need, not just some of it, but all the substances in the universe is present at any point of human need, when you need it. There's no place on earth where there is an absence of substance. There's no place in all the universe where substance is any more present or any less present than right where you are. I needed you to really get that. That's why I highlighted the word you. Because what this is talking about is this concept of substance, which is more than a concept, is available completely to you. The thing is, you have to figure out how to download it. You have to make it real to your experience. And I've got one more slide that talks about substance. I believe. Eric Butterworth says, you need to get it in, get your head around it. Understand that you live in substance. It's not like out there waiting to come to you. It's right here. It's with you. It's in you. It operates through you. You're in substance like a fish is in water. A fish doesn't know what water is. A fish isn't even aware that water exists. The important thing, according to Eric Butterworth, is that you hold on to an awareness that you are created in substance, formed of substance, and ceaselessly supported by substance, and that there is a free flow of substance in your life that is the continuation of a divine effort that made you in the first place. This idea is key to understanding that there's something you have to do in order to make this substance available. Well, it's always available, but to appropriate it in a way that works for you. Now, in our definition of being and doing, we said that engaging spiritual practices actually pulls substance into form. In Science of Mind, we have this symbol. Most of you who are here in the sanctuary can see it. It is sort of like this V shape. What that is illustrative of is the descent of spirit into form and particularization. So from the perfect mind of God, from the perfect realm of substance that is formless, invisible, and intangible, there is a principle that we can activate to bring forth whatever the experience is that we want. If my brother Amon was here, he would tell you exactly what that is in a hurry. He would say it has to do with you holding the mental equivalent that allows what you want to come through that funnel. And he'd be right about that. Now, here's the thing about spiritual practices. I think that many of us, we tend to think the big three. Right? I call them inner spiritual practices. So there is prayer, which is talking to God. This is where we get to express our love of God. This is where we get to express whatever is going on with us. This is where we get to proclaim the truth about our living situation and the glory of God. And what does God say? God says yes. God only says yes. I seem to recall that in the song. Then there's meditation as a spiritual practice, another inner spiritual practice. This is about listening to God, being still enough to allow whatever God's idea is to sift through the noise, through the clamor, to settle on our hearts. For a long time now, I have been one of the chief people around here who does visionings. Visioning is a spiritual practice in which we do, it's a meditative spiritual practice. We open ourselves to literally download what's God's idea. We're downloading substance. We're downloading the direction, the information, the things that tell us what to be. The name of this center, Heart and Soul Center of Light, came through that process, a meditative process. And then there's journaling, rounding out the big three inner spiritual practices that we use to do things. Journaling is this communing with the divine presence within us through self-exploration and self-exploration or introspection. So I know that you're familiar enough with these three forms of spiritual practice, but there are many others. And I want to lift up at least three others that are more outward facing. Not so much inner spiritual practices, but outer spiritual practices. They're giving, gratitude, and forgiveness. We don't tend to think of these necessarily when we engage our spiritual practices, maybe not right off the bat, but they are important. And I want to try to address them one at a time so that we can see they're a little bit kind of multidimensional as well. So first there's giving, right? Giving is God being the divine givingness of the universe. We are created in the image and likeness of this divine givingness. And Eric Butterworth says, you can't make any sense out of life or realize the free flow of substance in your experience until you see yourself as a giver. This is important. You can't begin to see yourself or make sense out of life until you see yourself as a giver. He says that givers are convinced that life is a giving process and that there is a motivation, or that people who give are motivated in all kinds of ways to what? Give themselves away. I'm thinking of our Minister of Music Emerita, Brannis McKenzie, whose song says, throw it away. Throw one's self away into the love, into the grace, into the peace that we would have in our lives. Throw ourselves away. And moving on from giving, move on to that next slide, would you please? I believe that should be gratitude. So gratitude is all about giving thanks. This is a spiritual practice that, well, it's an important state of your consciousness, as the slide says. Keeps you in an awareness of oneness in the divine flow. You hear me say this word over and over again, flow. Every single morning, the first thing I say to myself is, I am in the flow. I'm in the divine flow of all good. It simply flows forth from within and becomes a causative energy. Giving thanks causes something to happen. Being appreciative of the blessings that are already in your life causes some more blessings to rise up in your experience. Is this making sense? I can't believe that I'm telling you anything you don't already know. But the part that you might not have at the front of your consciousness is practicing this, practicing being grateful. With regard to any ideas or problems of lack, Eric Butterworth says that even if you have these kinds of issues, even because of them, the need is to get yourself recentered in the awareness of the ever-presence of substance. How do you do that? Reminding yourself that that which I need is already here. That which I need or want, I already have. Holding the mental equivalent and knowing that it's already done. Getting that feeling tone internally so that that mental equivalent has a resting place in you. And remember, God only says yes once it senses that you are in alignment with what is true. Yes is the answer. Keeping yourself centered in this awareness is the most effective way. Or the most effective way to do that is through thanksgiving, I think is what Butterworth is saying. The last spiritual practice I want to speak to, and I want to try to do this, there's something coming up for me, and I'm like wondering, should I share it? It's one of those moments that Dr. Andriette has when she goes, no, I don't want to talk about that, and someone's going, yeah, go ahead and talk about that. I'm having that kind of thing happening. But in forgiveness, I'd like to show that slide, please. I've offered you some ideas, one from Scripture. You can read that for yourself, but the basic idea is that the universe is not holding anything against you. The universe, God, is not going, well, I don't know about this here that you. The universe of God is love that supports and lifts you up. Return to me, for I have redeemed you. Effectively, God is saying there's nothing to forgive. You're already off the hook. You're mine. I love you. That's why you exist. Marianne Williamson, in A Year of Miracles, Daily Devotions and Reflections, says, well, we don't forgive people for their sake. We forgive them for the sake of our own peace of mind. She says forgiveness is her own salvation from pain, and that's true for all of us. Practicing forgiveness is, in my opinion, one of the most challenging things to accomplish because it goes against the grain. There's something about it that's like, I can't let them off the hook. I've got to keep them locked up tight in a chamber of my heart that they can't break out of. It's one of the way back rooms of my heart. And they're locked down. The problem is that you've got to be the jailer. You got to be in jail with them, going, you ain't getting out of there. It takes energy and it takes a lack of peace to keep somebody in jail, in the jail of your heart. Ernest Holmes in 365 Science of Mind says, it's only when we forgive everyone that we may feel certain that the weight of condemnation is lifted from our own consciousness. You feel better when you let people out of jail. We should refuse to carry the negations of yesterday into the positive atmosphere of today, for today the world is made new in our experience. Let me ask you a question. Are you mad about anything? Is there something that you see in the world that is really irritating you right now? Something that you see in local government or some institution? Something that you might see in your own household? Whatever it is, I just want to say, me too. Forgiveness has to be recurrent because we're all at the effect of being triggered by the appearance of that which we think we don't want. Here's the part that I didn't want to tell. When I was a kid, I think I was about 14, there was another kid in our class. His brother's name was Bones. I mean, that was his nickname. And I think people called him that because he really was a dangerous kid. And he was a notorious bully. And for some reason, he got his sights on me. Bones became my nemesis in, like, I don't know, 9th or 10th grade. And I wasn't the kind of kid that you were going to, you know, like you see in the movies, push him in a locker and lock him in there. It wasn't like that. But I was no match for Bones. When we fought, I never won. Bones was the kind of guy that would, you know, pick you up by your ankles and, you know, that kind of thing. And he always seemed to have it in for me. I avoided him as best I could. And one morning I came to school and somebody said to me, "Did you hear about Bones?" I was like, "What?" It's like, "He died." It's like, "He died? What happened?" Well, what happened was, unbeknownst to me, Bones had discovered barbiturates and had just got an overdose, and he passed away. And my reaction was, "Yes!" That was my reaction as a kid. It's like, good, he got what was coming to him. All he did was torment me. I'm glad he's gone. I ain't gonna miss him a bit. School is about to be a better experience. I buried Bones in a plot so deep in my heart that he would be irretrievable. I didn't have to worry about him no more. But I always would hate him. I didn't think about Bones, you know, like recurrently. Over many decades, over a period of 40 years, I may have thought of him maybe once or twice, you know, when I went back home to visit or something like that, or somebody brought him up. And I've come to a point in my life where I've decided, and this train of thought came up for me relatively recently in the last few years, as I'm approaching this monumental thing of becoming a septuagenarian. I'm going to turn 70, y'all. Anyway, I decided that I don't want to leave here with any stuff hanging off me. I don't want to have any grave clothes left on me when I step into my, or try to step into my new arraignment. I want to be clean. And I said, I'm going to forgive everybody that has ever done anything to me. So I'm in there. I actually made a list. I started going through it. I began actively doing my forgiveness work, and then I came to Bones. And it wasn't going to be easy. I decided that the only way to forgive Bones was to have a conversation with him. So I did. I simply, in my meditation, talked to Bones and say, "I see you finally for who you were. You were just a child like me. You were somebody's kid. There's nothing evil about you. You did what you did, and you made whatever mistakes you made and you learned whatever you needed to learn. But I want you to know I'm not mad at you anymore. I want you to know that if somehow in the vast expanse of reality we ever encounter each other again, I'm going to see you as somebody that is a friend, somebody that I'm not afraid of, somebody that I don't have to go into battle mode about. I tell you, something washed over me. I broke out in tears. This is 40 years after Bones died. I felt clean. And then I started finding other people I had buried in the graveyard of my own consciousness that I'm still working on. Forgiveness is the most important spiritual practice you will do, because a lack of forgiveness is what will keep you pinned down, unable to download universal source that is aching to support your highest and best form of living. I'm about out of time. I want to say, you know, this idea of being and doing is really part of a three-legged stool. We ain't had time to talk about the third leg today, which is having. Dr. Andrea talks about that all the time, doesn't she? That which is ours to be, do, and have. Well, I'm also a serial teacher, serial preacher, and so the next time I come around, we'll get around to the having aspect and how this all ties together, because having, by any other word, is manifesting, actually receiving that which you most want in your life. In the meantime, I'm going to ask you to not only engage these spiritual practices, but to believe something, to believe that love is the great healer. Whether it's Reverend Amon, Reverend Dr. Andriette, Reverend Sonia, Reverend Jack, myself, we're always talking about love as being the one aspect that sweeps everything away. Everybody's got bones in their life somewhere. Love heals that. So believe love. I'm going to ask Brandis McKenzie to tell us a little bit about that. Thank you so much.